At Systematics, we help medical manufacturing companies solve their most challenging automation problems by leveraging the latest in technology and a deep resume of experience.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Robot Industry Podcast. Our sponsor today for this episode is NuScale Robotics from Victor, New York. I'm pleased and excited to welcome my guest today from Systematics Automation. His name is Rob Veldus.
Hello, Jim.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Rob Veldus has been selling automation solutions to the manufacturing industry for over 25 years. Rob has spent his career promoting technologies to assist clients with improving operations and reducing operational costs. He has succeeded in assisting both large corporations and small enterprises with the implementation of automation. He is currently the director of sales at Systematics, a leading provider of automated manufacturing systems to the automotive and healthcare industries. Rob, listen, I'm very excited to have you on the podcast today. And I did want to make a disclosure that you and I have known each other for a very long time. And we used to work together indeed.
Yeah, 15 years.
I want to disclose that I'm a big fan and excited to have you on today. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, kind of from your perspective, what's happening in automation and machine building. Are you seeing any short, medium, or long-term trends that you can talk to our audience about today?
Absolutely, Jim. We've, with COVID, naturally a short-term trend is to help with the war in COVID with medical device manufacturers. We're playing in spaces that traditionally might have been offshore, you know, personal protective equipment gear. We're seeing a change to bring that back to North America using automation. Also seeing a big uptick in medical diagnostics, where we've played for a while, but customers have converted systems to help detect for COVID. So we're playing in the manufacturing space as well as the laboratory processing space, helping labs process the quantities of testing that is required, as well as on the vaccine space too. So we've got all the bases covered. Fortunately, we're positioned as a medical automation solutions provider. So this is, I'll say, really put a lot of impetus behind our organization and kept us very busy the last few months.
So in this, you're doing a lot of material handling, obviously. You're probably doing a lot of very different automation systems, but you've also had to probably respond very quickly because these aren't your normal delivery cycles during an emergency like we have now.
No, absolutely. They're very short delivery cycles. So traditionally, customers have created specifications for projects. We've had to short circuit that. With our experience in medical device, we're fortunate to have a good understanding of what the customer's anticipated requirements are, and work very quickly to get to an engineering phase as opposed to the development of a spec over a very long period of time.
Yeah, I guess because, in traditional times, you've got that early romance and you've got the back and forth negotiations and all this stuff, but you've really had to cut that right out and probably have your teams working overtime and pulling weekends and doing all the rest.
Absolutely. There's a huge element of trust. We've established relationships with the customer base. So we're, in many instances, you're single sourced and you're partnered with your customer to get to the finish line as quick as possible.
And so, but at the end, you still have to do your factory acceptance tests and you have to still do your online, in factory tests as well.
We still do the testing. The world has changed a bit where a customer doesn't necessarily come to our facility to see the test. We might do a virtual reality test. So we've seen, some changes to our processes as well.
Rob, what makes building automation for medical device sector different than, say, automotive or consumer sector?
Well, we cater to automotive as well. The reality is there are different requirements, cleanliness being an obvious one. But, we cater to both. In the automotive, we say we test new technologies. In medical, we bring proven technologies to the table. I mentioned cleanliness. Customers are very concerned about contamination, product tracking and traceability. We've proven that in automotive, where you know a single pump is, you know, we have all the data on how that was assembled. Healthcare is going to a model where every product has a unique identification code. So proven in automotive, we take it to healthcare with an added level of control. You know, we're not only tracking criteria on how a product's made, but traceability, the high element of security and verification on systems. So, you know, risk of failure is not an option in medical. Automotive doesn't like it, but in healthcare, it's not an option.
And so you must be also doing a lot of work in machine vision then with medical device as part of your track and trace.
Absolutely. You know, customers are going beyond just tell me if I've got a good product. They actually want to use the data to track and trace the root cause of the problems, have the historical data. If there is a field issue, that they can go back and see the data and what the failure was.
And so overall, in some of the kind of trending, you're seeing more and more, if you kind of could exclude COVID, are you seeing more clients trying to get to market quicker? What are some of the things that they're thinking about?
Well, I think COVID's going to change a lot how our customers evaluate automation. You know, the typical return on investment calculation where, you know, so many people reduce the headcount, what's the floor space cost? I think that formula is going to change in the medium term. So I also think that the total cost of ownership of automation, that evaluation is going to be easier to justify than it was prior to COVID. You know, manual processing, in some cases, some of our customers are shut right down because they just can't put people that close together. And these are very established manufacturing industries that, you know, are vital to the economy. But they literally have to shut down production because their workforce can't work elbow to elbow.
And so what's happening for them? Are they putting in collaborative technologies? Are they or are they just simply automating them?
I think, you know, I go back to this. You brought up a good word, simply automating. You know, I look back at a lot of the solutions we provide to our customers over the 5 years that have been, or 6 years have been at Systematics. Honestly, there's very few that I can think of that an operator has been within 6 feet of another operator. Typically, we are automating where the input is manual and the output is manual, and those people are typically far apart from each other. So, you know, the automation solution itself is highly structured to, I'll say, be COVID compliant right out of the box. So I can see that being written into specs going forward, but not necessarily, you know, they're already compliant.
And I kind of assume that because you do so much work in PPE and medical diagnostics and such, that a lot of the manufacturers are thinking, hey, why am I doing this? Why am I making this offshore somewhere? Maybe that's unsafe or that's unreliable. And I'm assuming that this kind of reshoring initiative is just something that's going to be part of the new way of us doing business. We need to manufacture more. That means we need more automation in North America.
Yeah, you know, there's a company that went from 10 people to 300 people in the span of 3 months in our neighborhood making PPE. And I went over to visit them. They were looking for North American-based automation. They had purchased 13 lines of Asian automation, and it just wasn't reliable enough for them to, I'll say, bank their orders. So they wanted to have North American-built, engineered and built automation solutions to compete with that. And they're going to pay a premium, but the reliability factor was tremendous for them.
And it's all kind of about uptime today, right? That's the thing. It's you know, I think we're going to see a future where we have very little planned downtime with IoT and with machine communications and such. But right now, it's really concentrating on our uptime.
Yeah, uptime, absolutely. We you know, OEE, uptime, these are all measurables that customers are always pushing us to get closer to 100 all the time.
And so what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about AI and deep learning, because you kind of touch on those things, but in traditional manufacturing, for your just your general manufacturers, are they interested in it? Are they interested to find out more, or they absolutely want to do it?
You know, I went to the Hanover Automation Fair in 2018, and that fair literally had just the messaging was all about AI. You saw Amazon Warehouse Services Solutions there. You saw Siemens with a venue that could hold 300 people, and they had speakers from Microsoft. They had the whole data world covered. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about AI. You're starting to see implementation. We had expected it to take traction much quicker. We truly do not see specifications that ask for it. As a salesperson, you don't want to, you know, you want to sell a competitive solution and you make your customers aware of possibilities. The problem is there's no benchmark data to say what's the benefit. If you're already running machines at 95% OEE, what do I get by spending an extra 10% of the machine costs? What's that measurable? And honestly, there's not data to prove it out. There are applications I've heard in the field where they're extremely complex solutions that have hiccups, and they don't know where these hiccups come from. And AI is the perfect tool to analyze and get that OEE where it was 60 and bring it back to a reasonable level. So that's where it is happening. Again, the data to support what the return on investment is for that investment is still sparse.
And I guess that kind of that whole AI becomes kind of a like a tool in the toolbox. And if you need that tool, grab that tool. But also, I think we have to understand as manufacturers, we should maybe have an AI budget or an industry 4.0 budget, because if I'm buying a $3 million piece of machinery, I need to put some people and some money and some recurring costs into making sure that the AI stays current.
I think you have to start thinking beyond, you know, I'll say dream state. You let engineers go and they will dream up, you know, the idealistic solution, not the realistic solution. You need a budget to be able to work around. And we put a system out the door about 2 years ago. We quoted the customer AI, I'll call it icing on the cake on the whole solution. And we let the engineer specify what they wanted. Well, naturally, they went on a tangent where, well, we need to know the humidity in the room. We need to know, you know, everything about that machine. We were taking every sensor on that machine and feeding it into the AI engine. At the request of engineering, at the end of it, we showed them, well, this is what it would cost. And they said, well, we can't justify that. And I honestly believe, I mean, you need to have a budget at the table. You also need to have an understanding of what data is important on the machine. These machines we produce today are covered in sensors and data that can feed to an AI engine, but it all becomes noise. It's much like, you know, the 1980s, oh, let's do report generation. And companies were getting reports and reports and reports. Well, nobody was reading the reports. And in the AI world, I think you've got to be very cognizant that you don't need every piece of data. You need to determine what's important to your process, measure that, evaluate that, and then feed that into an AI engine to get some effective results.
Yeah, it all comes down to like just plain old business case. And like you say, if you could get to 98 or 99 OEE with AI, everyone would be doing it for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that is our future down the road, just like Industry 4.0. You can't not buy it because all the sensors are smart and they're all talking to each other. So we have access to the data, that's for sure.
Yeah. We actually have you know, manufacturing companies in our neighborhood, like Linamar is a very well-known automotive manufacturer in Guelph that is, you know, cracking new ground with an innovation center that is working on lights out manufacturing. The truth is, the only way you'll get there is with AI. So that, you know, the end goal, lights out manufacturing. How do you get there? You've got to determine all those steps, and AI will be a key to get there.
And what other things are you seeing today in general machine building and automation system? Are you using a lot more robotics than you have in the past, or are you using it the same?
No, I'd say we're using more robots, significantly more. Robot pricing has come down dramatically since you and I first met 15 years ago. We didn't see a lot of robots on the floor. And when you went to a trade show, people were floored by seeing robots. They just would, I mean, that was the moving object that everybody was fascinated by. Today, you go to a trade show, pre-COVID, and people just, you know, are walking by booth after booth with robots, and robots that they're size of pencils. So, you know, robot pricing, robot solutions, they cover the bandwidth, and they get you the finish line faster than trying to engineer your own pick and place.
And are you seeing any changes in, say, things like part feeding?
Yeah, there's you know, pick by vision. There's some different mechanical technologies that are out there that are quite innovative. You know, you really, depending what you're trying to feed, there's likely a solution out there. But there are solutions that, you know, aren't more effective than a human, and that's the challenge. How do you, on these difficult applications, how do you come up with a cost-effective solution that's more effective than a human?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's been some use cases today where, you know, humans are pretty handy. Like, we're pretty good at doing a lot of things. And what we want to make sure is that, you know, things like pick and placing that people are not very good at, and robots are especially good at, that we put the right technology in for the right reasons.
Exactly.
Rob, so you've now been operating for 8 months with COVID. How has COVID had an effect on your business and the staff at Systematics?
Well, it's definitely affected how we do business. Myself, I seldom go into the office where I went routinely into the office previously. So that's a big change personally, something to get used to. On the front end of the business, which I play in, that has changed tremendously. The travel is dropped dramatically. Virtual meetings are the norm. Prior to COVID, virtual meetings were not the norm. I mean, conference calls were, but I had Skype on my desktop and never used it. So the front end of the business is changed, and I think it's changed permanently. I don't think we'll go back to a model where I travel to see every customer. The engineering phase, so we get a purchase order and goes to engineering. The engineering phase has changed where, you know, where we're letting people work from home, and it's very productive. It can't be entirely so. We do need collaboration, and to bring teams together is valuable. But the home, the engineer going to the office every day, that's likely to change. So customer design reviews have always been a remote process. Customers tune in, and we bring up designs on the screen, and customers review them, look at them, give us their input, and we go back to refining our offering. So that hasn't changed. On the build side, you know, we practice COVID safe policies, procedures. So that, you know, still need people on the floor to put the machines together. Where you start to see, I'll say, a significant change is the FAT. You know, customers are not necessarily wanting to visit us in this environment and make a trip to stay in a hotel and what have you. So we have done virtual FATs where literally we just take a camera along the line, we show them the data. Again, there's a lot of trust in that, but we do virtual FATs. On the service side, we're starting to see more remote access. Medical devices have always been a bit resistant to allowing you to tap into their machines remotely to look at performance and fix a problem. But I think that's going to change. I mean, there are security solutions that are out there that make it safe to do so. You have to convince the IT departments, but with COVID, it's a necessity, not a luxury.
And you think that's going to stay the same, right? Where we can run off machine virtually and save all this time and travel, why wouldn't we do that?
Jim, honestly, you take that travel budget where you're sending 10 people to run off a very large system. You could buy some AI with that.
Absolutely. But you're very busy, right, at Systematics right now?
Yeah, I'm extremely busy. Honestly, it's busier than I've ever seen it.
And so that's good news, obviously. And you're creating some cool tools and cool projects and machines to support our fight against COVID, which is very exciting. And I think that there's something really nice about creating automation that will help humanity. Do you kind of get that? Like, is there a feeling that's just on the floor about that?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, COVID is going to make our industry stronger. It's forced the acceleration of technology. You look at it on a personal level, you look at it on a business level. It's forced us to adapt, and it's made us more productive in many ways. It's a huge cost to get there, but at the end of the day, it's accelerated the requirement for automated technology.
And I think we're going to see a lot more machines and a lot more manufacturing in North America. So these are some things that I think are going to be good for our economy and good for humanity.
Absolutely.
Rob, thanks for taking time to chat with our audience today. How can people get a hold of you?
Cell phone's the easiest, 519-635-2783. If you prefer email, just go to our website, systematics-inc.com.
And Systematics is spelled with an X, Systematix automation. I'd like to thank NuScale Robotics for their sponsorships. NuScale designs and builds a Q-Span automated small part measurement system that automates digital caliper measurements, data logging, and part handling. Q-Span pick, measures, records, and places. The Q-Span system is the new standard for QC solutions for high mix, small batch manufacturing, and works with Universal Robots' line of collaborative robots, so it's easy and safe to deploy in your QC lab. I'd like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, the AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. These four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, end users, research groups, and consulting firms throughout the world that are driving automation forward. And as a reminder, A3 is changing its brand a little bit. It's going to be known now as just A3. I'd also like to thank Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. And you can find them at paintedrobot.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, our email address is therobotindustrypodcast@gmail.com. Or you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening and be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction Industrial Marketing. And I'd like to thank my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Chris Colvin for audio support, my partner, Janet, and our sponsors, A3, Painted Robot, and NuScale Robotics.